Ray Ferraro, former NHLer, TSN analyst, joins us now. Ray, how you doing? Welcome back to the show.
I'm doing well. What's going on?
Oh, man, a lot. I had a really good conversation with Hitchcock today about that St. Louis Blues team. And, you know, hey, the Oilers have had a lot of injuries, no doubt. They're in last place. The Blues have had a lot. They're in first place. So, you know, they clearly have much more depth. And, you know, people always ask, Ray, you've been on teams that have acquired guys at the deadline. And, you know, some people always talk about chemistry and if it upsets the apple cart or not. Have you ever seen a case where you felt like it actually did really upset the apple cart bringing in somebody and for some reason it doesn't work? How much of a risk is that truly, or is that overblown and you're always better to just add better players to your team?
Well, I would think you'd have to be careful that you're making a significant upgrade, not adding a player just so you can add a player and you can tell your fans, see, look, we're adding a player at the deadline. And the reason I say that is if the new player is no better than what you have, then you're going to have a disgruntled guy that gets displaced. And then people are going to look at the new guy, other players, and say, but he's not bringing anything for us. Mm-hmm. If you bring a player that makes your talent level better, that fills a rather obvious hole on your team, guys are all on board. You can all understand that, even if you're the guy that gets slightly displaced, because you can understand that. But if you make a lateral move just to make a move and your team is playing well at the time, I don't really know why teams do that. I think there's probably more cases where it's, at the very least, not helped.
Okay. And now, it's interesting, and it's very early on, but the Chicago Blackhawks, for a first-place team, made a lot of moves at the deadline. Now, granted, they probably had some holes to fill for sure, and they brought in a guy in Ladd that knows the team and everybody, so you'd think there's a natural comfort level there. Have you seen anything in the recent games of the Hawks that maybe they're just trying to fit everybody in the right spots now that they've got so many new players?
Well, there is that for sure, because, you know, you drop three or four guys into the lineup, and you know, as always, coaches have their whiteboard in their office and they have the lines drawn up the way it's supposed to work. And what may end up working for them is something completely different. I mean, they added three forwards to their group, Fleischman, Weiss, and Andrew Ladd. And you can't expect them all to fit seamlessly. The one thing, of course, Chicago has going for it is they're a damn good team anyway. Mm-hmm. But I my worry always for a team like that is that one of the three parts is going to work. And you've got two guys that turn out to be like misfit toys. You know, it just doesn't work for them there. Now you've got them and you're juggling people all over your lineup. They wanted and have wanted to add a forward to play with Hossa and Taves for a long period of time. They just didn't have the cap room to do it. They had to wait till the deadline when they could maximize their cap space. Hossa was injured, I believe, for 10 or 12 games and just came back. So you're adding four forwards to your group. So the little ditch that they've hit here is probably not surprising. To me, the real question mark for Chicago will be whether their blue line can hold up. Last year, you know, they rode those four guys really hard. Johnny Oduya's gone. Trevor Van Riemsdyk's in his first full year. You're asking a lot of him to help be one of your top four big minute guys.
Ray Ferraro from TSN joining us. Ray, doing the Montreal and Ottawa and the Toronto games, you've seen the Eastern Conference a lot this year. The Philadelphia Flyers, a big win last night over to the Detroit Red Wings. Sam Gagner's having a little bit of a resurgence in his career, helping them, you know, with Voracek coming out. Voracek's close to coming back. Which of those teams do you like better to get the final playoff spot in the East? Detroit or Philly, and why?
Well, you know, Philly's got, I believe, one game in hand, or is it two? They play tonight.
Two in hand, yeah.
So they'll have one after tonight. They're in Chicago tonight. Certainly the game in hand is something that's very important. I mean, I'm still going to say Detroit's is going to make it, mainly because Philly and Pittsburgh play three times still.
Okay.
and those games seem to always end up as a whitewash. You know, nobody ever really makes any ground when you're playing head to head all the time. Now Philly goes and wins all three of them. Well, then Pittsburgh's in trouble too. You know, I mean, it's not like anybody's out of the clear there. But I don't know. I just have some gut feel that Detroit's going to get it back together because they've stumbled around here for about 3 weeks, and they'll have enough to make it. But I don't say that with any great confidence, Jason. I've said to you many times this year when I look at the East, you know, you take Washington out of the mix because they're clearly the best team, and all of a sudden you've got about six or eight teams that look all the same. They're all a little different. You know, one team's defense is better, one team's goalie's better, one team's forward's better, but they're all the same. And so there's no real upsets to me in the East past Washington.
Yeah, the Capitals, I agree with you, Ray. I don't see many weaknesses on that team. But, you know, it's funny how many organizations, St. Louis, San Jose, Washington, where people put them in that category of, well, yeah, they're really good, but until they win something in the playoffs. And, you know, San Jose and St. Louis are very good again, but San Jose is going to have to beat likely the Ducks and the Kings in consecutive rounds, and the Blues are probably going to have to beat, you know, a combination of Dallas, Chicago, and Nashville just to get to face one of the other Pacific teams. Like Washington, I think, has potentially the easier road of all those questionable teams of have they won anything than we've seen in previous years, and this is the year they probably have to take advantage of it more than ever.
Oh, I agree. I mean, they're, you know, just as you outline that Western Conference, you know, it's a murderer's row to, you know, to get anywhere. And when you get through the first round, oh great, look who's sitting at you in the next round. There's just, you know, like there's no easy way for them, and it will be tough in the West for sure to make yourself a viable contender, to make yourself good enough, deep enough, strong enough to get through what they have to get through. And so I would agree, Washington is the best bet.
Ray Farrell from TSN. Joins us. Ray, there was some talk about the expansion draft today, and, you know, there's still a few wrinkles to be ironed out, but definitely there's going to be fewer players protected. You know, the Atlanta team that you were a part of, like, I think the last thing the NHL wants to do is have teams, like Rick Tabarachi one year, I think the Minnesota year in Columbus, he was the number one player taken, and good for Rick, but let's be honest. Like, you're not going to be able to build...
Jamie McLennan was the second pick that year.
Yeah, and Noodles is a beauty, but he's not a guy you could build your team around, right? Like
they've
got to limit the numbers that they've done. It looked like 7-3-1 or 8 forwards and 1 goalie, which makes it really interesting. You're only going to lose one player. Like, yeah, it could hurt the team. I got a question for you. Do you think guys with no trade clauses should automatically have to be protected by the team that gave them the no trade clause?
Well, that's a sticky one, isn't it? You know, I mean, the problem is, whether I think it or not, I'm almost certain there's nothing in most of those contracts that stipulates any clause for what an expansion draft might look like. And so they're not, I don't think they're protected. I do believe they should almost be off the books. I mean, that's something in a contract that they've negotiated, and if they've got a full no move, then a full no move to me would include expansion.
Yeah.
I mean, that's moving, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I agree. Like the wording, I looked it up in the CBA. I think it's Article 11.18 or whatever it is that, you know, it just talks about, you know, like when you can have a no movement clause that you can't be waived, you can't be anything. The no trade clause only means you can't be traded. And I think guys with a no trade clause, because they can be put on waivers, those guys probably could be exposed. I could see that argument, but if you have a full no movement clause, I think the team's stuck with having to protect that guy.
I mean, I'm no lawyer, but no move means no move, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like they can't send him to the minors, but they could all of a sudden concoct a scenario where
they could move in an expansion draft. I just don't see that as fair and equitable to the contract that they signed. What's really going to be interesting, too, and this is something that wasn't part of the equation when Atlanta and Columbus and Minnesota were, or Nashville were putting together their expansion clubs, is there's a salary cap floor. And those teams have to get to the floor. So they're going to have to draft some people making some money. And a lot of times teams, you know, they look for low cost as they try to just get their footing in their with their team. But they can't do that anymore. They've got to spend money. Whatever the cap floor is going to be, they've got to get there. And so there'll be some interesting names that get selected, which will make things more fun, perhaps, for the fans that are following it.
Ray Ferraro from TSN joins us. Ray, Todd McClellan talked about the final 10 games, him and Peter Chiarelli, you know, looking at the character. Now, I know some people don't believe in character. I'm not one. I think it definitely can show some things. Now, I'm not sure, like, when they're analyzing character in the final 10 games, what does that make you think they're looking at?
Well, it's not just, it's their play on the ice. It's their preparation for the game. Are they taking this like it's summer hockey and then showing up and playing, or are they taking it seriously? Are guys going out a little more, maybe when they shouldn't be? Are guys blowing off workouts? Is this to them a real part of the season, or do they think that they're just kind of cruising around? That stuff all will be looked at and evaluated for sure. The play on the ice, of course, that's pretty easy to look at and evaluate. The character part is not just on the ice. The character part is everything else that goes with it. And I think all of those factors would be part of it.
Do you think in the 10 game span you can get an accurate read on the character of a player?
Well, if it was just 10 games, probably not, but they've been there all year. I think they've probably got a pretty good idea on what they see or what they have in front of them, and now they're going to use this last 10 as almost like a lab test to see now how committed are these guys when they think nothing really matters. And you know what? Some guys will hurt themselves a great deal. Some guys will help themselves, but I don't think it'll always be readily available by just watching them play.
How do you think, were you ever at a stage in your career, Ray, where you had heard rumblings, maybe young in your career, that people were talking about, he's on the trading block or he might be part of it? How does that impact players, do you believe?
Well, it sucks. I mean, it's totally out of your control. And when it gets into the paper or, now on the internet, your first thought is, well, it's got to be true because it's written. But in a lot of cases, it's not. It's somebody hears a tidbit of information and they put two and two together and they come up with 4.5. They don't quite have it all right, but they got some of it. And so the reason it stinks is because everywhere you go, people are asking you about it and you can't quite clear it out of your mind. I mean, I had it early in my career in Hartford. Really early in my career, and then I ended up playing there for 7 years. And what I learned by that is just because your name pops up, you best not be worrying about it, because there's going to be a lot of times your name's mentioned and nothing happens, and then one day you're going to get a phone call at home like I got with the Rangers, and they say, oh yeah, by the way, we've made a trade and you're it. And you just get blindsided. There's nothing you can do to prepare for it.
Ray, always good stuff, man. We will talk to you next Wednesday. What games are you doing this week?
I'm on my way back from Toronto now. I had to stop in Kelowna to do a little something or other, and then I'm on my way to Vancouver, and I'm off for the week. I'm back in Toronto next week.
All right, Ray, we'll talk to you next Wednesday. Have a good week.
Thank you. See ya.